Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, all you wonderful, wonderful F1 fans out there. It is race weekend again. It is also a sprint weekend. Dun, dun, dun. And it is also the last race before the mid-season break. That is right. That is the last race for an entire month, 27 days after this weekend, before our next race. And if you're hearing my voice, it can only mean two things. One, that my name is Kelsey, and two, you have chosen to listen to the newest edition of F101. And as always, we're going to start this episode off with the hot topics. This is everything you need to know in the world of F1. And we're going to start off with some pretty massive news coming out of Mercedes. No, nobody got fired yet. No, we don't have contract talks yet, which is should be more of the story coming out of Mercedes. But it is actually new upgrades again that they're bringing towards Spa. Normally, when Mercedes brings out upgrades, it is very a Mercedes-esque looking evaluation, upgrade, technological advancement, out of the box thinking, however you want to put it. But they didn't go so far out of the box this time for this development. They have developed, they've reshaped the side pods that are new for this part of the season. They're looking a little McLaren-esque. And they're also looking a little bit Ferrari-esque. Now, that being said, if you look at the Aston Martin side pods, they do look a little bit like Ferrari. Ferrari did kind of set the benchmark last season for the type of side pod aerodynamic design that the majority of the grid is using, minus Red Bull, of course. And now you're starting to see this influence a little bit more and more in Mercedes. So let's get into it. The front part of the side pods, this is where the air goes into the side pods and gets pushed down to give them downforce and then out through the back of the car. It's a lot narrower, which you would think is a good thing and a bad thing at the same time. So if you're picturing at it, you're looking at the car, the driver's right in the middle, the side pods are to the left and to the right, and the front of the side pods used to be more of a circle shape when it came to directing the air into the side pods. Now, as useful as it is, you actually lose a ton of air flow through that type of shape. So what they've done, if you picture a circle, now cut the bottom off. Okay, so you've got a half a circle now. Now, what you're going to do is the bottom right-hand corner, you're going to scoop that in just a little bit. You're going to mold it. So you're kind of looking like a half a circle with the bottom right-hand corner squished in. I mean, there's no real intelligent way to describe this. So what this upgrade has done, what this modification has done, it is going to direct the airflow a lot cleaner, so there's a lot less dead air around the intake area going through the side pods, as well as they're claiming they're going to get more downforce from this design. Obviously, I have no idea if they're right or wrong in this situation. It's just one of those things that you're going to have to wait and see. As you travel along the edge and the corners of the side pods, you're going to get to the rear. So picture, you're looking at the side pods and it was a clear flat side from front to back. Now what they've done the last back quarter of the side pod is essentially what they've done is they've made, it's not a divot, it's not a rut, but what they've done is like picture a box. Now squish one half of the box in, squish the corner in, now smooth that out. That general shape, that general well, is what they've added to the side pods on the Mercedes. Now, again, this is for aerodynamic efficiency. What it is it sucks the air in towards the side pods a little bit more. It also surprisingly gives them a little bit more downforce as well. And more importantly, it also directs the air in a more direct way out the back end of the car over the wing beams. In the back, which gives them just that little bit more downforce. This is where you start to get into the Ferrari Aston Martin type concept of development. Both of those cars do have something like that. It's a little bit different enough to say that it's not a direct copy, but it is starting to look like, you know, the car is starting to look like the rest of the grid, which equals a little bit more performance for Mercedes, which is always a good thing for them. And the last upgrade you're going to notice on the side pods, it's more of a top view, or if you're looking at it straight on, you might notice it a little bit more. And what they've done is they've created a valley, but not as deep as Ferrari did last year, to direct the airflow over the side pods more efficiently. So let's go back to 2022. Ferrari comes out with this car. The side pods have these massive wells from the front end to the back of the side pods. A radical design. It looks amazing. It looks, you know, high tech. It looks spacious. And it worked fairly well for Ferrari for at least the first half of the season. Mercedes has taken everything they've learned from Ferrari and all the deficiencies and efficiencies that they've learned throughout the year, this year and last year, for performance, and, you know, they've crunched the data, they looked at all this information, and what they've decided to do is they're adding that divot or that well in the side pod, but what they're doing is they're not making it a part of the engine cover. It's not one straight, smooth scoop out into the cover of the engine. What they've done is, if you picture going from left to right, you're going to scoop down, and you're going to come up just a little bit. Now you're on the right-hand side of the side pod. Now you're going to add a very smooth step, and then it's going to go into the cover of the engine. What they've essentially done is they've added an extra step to direct that airflow just that little bit cleaner over the engine compartment, as well as minimizing the amount of dead air that goes over and along the side of the car. I think this is going to definitely help them with the downforce. This is a very, I mean, it's not out of the box thinking, but it's very intelligent thinking for Mercedes, going from a absolutely no side pod concept to, hey, we got to catch up. We did this wrong. We need to throw side pods on here. You know, what do? We need to look for inspiration without being accused of copying people. I think they've gone along with this in a very intelligent way. I do expect this is going to help the car, you know, with aerodynamic efficiency. It's going to be faster track times and a little bit more downforce, which obviously will never hurt any car on the grid. And last but not least, the last upgrade they've done is something that some people noticed last season, and either you notice it or you don't. Generally, this piece and this upgrade is not very noticeable. It's usually about 4 to 5 inches long. It's at the very bottom of the car. You don't really notice it. What I'm talking about is some teams, including Mercedes, what they've done is they've added, it's like a carbon fiber wire that is attached to the bottom of the car, generally the very bottom of the side pod. What this does is that it takes out the flexibility from the side skirt of the floor, as well as adding some stability to it going over bumps, maybe when you get some contact, when you go over, you know, the gravel, whatever the case may be. If you've got a rougher track, it adds more stability, which makes it a little tougher to break. So normally, like I said before, it's only a couple inches long. Mercedes has got this massive piece now that looks to go from the edge of the floor all the way up to about mid side pod in the back. Just for how they've designed the side pod, it actually doesn't take anything away aerodynamically, and it also doesn't take anything away when it comes to creating a dead air space or slowing the car down or making it cumbersome in any way. But what they've also done is that it's no longer just a wire that helps the flexibility. To me, it looks like, and I tried to find it during the race this weekend, I tried to take a look for it, but it's really, really hard because it's such a small piece. It looks like it is a stiff piece of carbon fiber. There's no flexibility to it whatsoever. It goes along with the car side by side. It blends in, it matches in, all that kind of fun jazz. And more importantly, Mercedes has put it in such a spot at such an angle that not only does it keep the back end of the floor from flexing, it also prevents, I mean, if you take the back quarter of the floor panel on the car, like the skirting, the very fancy part, the edged part, it not only does it cover the back end of the car, but take another, you know, quarter of that in front of it. They've, if that makes any sense, the angle that they've put it at almost prevents like half of the floor from flexing more than it should while going over rough terrain, including gravel, grass, uneven surfaces, and of course, you can never forget the side bumpers to keep cars on the road. I think this is great. And that's the type of That's the type of out-of-the-box thinking that we want to see from Mercedes. This is going to help them give them that just a little bit edge, a little bit further on. It will also intrigue other teams. Maybe some of them will essentially copy the idea. They'll modify it. Mercedes will look at that and modify that even more. But those are the major upgrades that Mercedes is coming into this weekend before the spring break. I expect them to be very useful upgrades. I do expect them to be used to the fullest of their potential. And more importantly, I do expect track time for Mercedes to come down. Moving on, Alpine is back in the spotlight. And again, not for amazing reasons. Alpine had announced the day of this recording, so they've announced this on Friday morning, that they are officially dismissing their team principal and their sporting director after this weekend's race. The official statement, if you want to read between the lines, they just haven't kept the team on a consistent basis. That being either consistently bad with, you know, plans for improvement, or consistently good for obvious improvements on track time and points. Essentially what it came down to is when the team principal had come in, he had, you know, stated that Alpine has a 100 race development plan. So essentially a 5-year plan to bring Alpine from where they were, and at that time we're talking 7th in the standings for the Constructor Series, to championship status. They're winning races, they're going to be winning the drivers' standings, they're going to be winning the Constructor standings, all of those sorts of things. Well, they've gone through this 100 race plan restart twice now. So when the team principal came in 2 years ago, they made this massive announcement. This is what we're going to do. This is the new staff. This is the new direction that we're going. And they didn't exactly have an awesome season. They did okay, but not nearly as well as they had wanted to. Fast forward 2022, they brought in, obviously, you've got new standards. You've got new cars. You've got new aerodynamics. As well with that, they brought in new staff, new management, all sorts of things. And what the team had decided to do, what management decided to do, is they were going to restart the 100 race developmental plan again. And with the points that they accumulated last season, the troubles they've got this season, plus the points they have, upper management, essentially sponsorship, had decided that this is not acceptable anymore, that they were not heading in the right direction fast enough. Not only that, but the team was so inconsistent where they'd have a really good week, then they would have a horrible week, then a horrible week, then a really good week. And it would just bounce back and forth way too much. They did not believe in the consistency and the direction the team principal and the sporting director was heading in. So they've both been replaced, essentially. There's no official name on who's going to be replacing either of these gentlemen. This is kind of what the spring break is for. Rumors flying, and I don't put too much heed into this, is that the new team principal would be Binotto. He was the team principal for Ferrari for years before he was let go. I'm not putting a whole lot of faith in this statement, just because I don't think he would fit very well in the Alpine team as it is. They're very French. And I'm not saying this in a derogatory way whatsoever, but the French team, Alpine, is definitely known as being one of the most direct teams with drivers, staff, management, all that sorts of things, where if it's your fault, it is your fault. It is stated, it is your fault, you need to fix it, we will help you, but this issue is your problem, your fault if something goes wrong. The way that Binotto runs his team, it's all about team development. It's the team's issue. It's the team's this. It's the team's that. And that's just not how Alpine works. So I'd be shocked and I'd be stoked if Binotto was to come over, since he got sacked from Ferrari. But I'm not really holding my breath. To finish this statement when it comes to Alpine, this is kind of just the icing on the cake of a very tumultuous year. I think it's very important timing that they decided to sack these two gentlemen before the spring break. That way they can come back refreshed. They've got new direction, new purpose, and then hopefully they'll be able to bring it together and score some major points in the second half of the season. And to finish off this section of the hot topics for this week, I am very, very excited to announce that the next couple, this has been stated, the F1 Academy Twitter page and a bunch of other motorsports social media accounts has stated this. So this is going to happen. This is a fact. This is not a rumor. I am very happy to announce that the F1 Academy, at least the next three races, will be broadcast live. I am absolutely stoked about this. I do believe this is the next step in the evolution of the F1 Academy. You put it in front of the eyes, you get the sponsors, you get the money, you get the evolution of this section of Formula One. I am very excited to see these women drive. I've been catching up on them as much as I possibly can, finding as much footage as I possibly can of watching them racing. It's amazing racing. It's fantastic. And I don't say it to be surprised. I don't say it to say that women's racing is not exciting. But the quality of this is something that everybody needs to see. It's not just the big boys that can, you know, go 300 kilometers an hour and have amazing races and have overtakes. A lot of people think that because the W Series didn't succeed and that women's motorsport racing is not as popular as the men's, that it's not as good a quality. I challenge you to watch F1 Academy when it's on, when it's being broadcasted, and you tell me which one you like better, because in my opinion, 90% of the time, just from pure excitement and raceability and skill from the races that I have seen compared to this season alone, I would rather watch the F1 Academy when it's broadcast. I want to see this on TV, and not just on F1 TV that you have to subscribe. I want to see it on ESPN. I want to see it on TSN. I want to see it on TV where you don't have to pay for it, where you can watch it and discover it for yourself and enjoy it just as much as I am. And there you have it, folks. These are the hot topics for this week. It is a sprint weekend, so we're just going to dive right into the sprint. Before we dive into the sprint qualifying, I should remind you that regular qualifying happened on Friday, and then everything that had to do with the sprint race, so the sprint shootout qualifying and the sprint race was Saturday, and the race was this Sunday. So let's jump into Friday qualifying in the extraordinarily rainy Spa circuit. So traditionally, when it comes to the Belgian Grand Prix at Spa, we will not see this race until after the summer break. We would not see this race traditionally for another month. And there's a reason for that. It is mainly because of the weather. The Belgian weather right now, this time of year, it's not unpredictable. It is predictable. It's rainy. It's kind of like their rainy season, especially where the circuit is. So the weather itself can be very interesting, to say the least, and slightly entertaining for those of us who aren't racing in it. And this weekend was a very perfect example. Why? Q1, if you watched it live like I did, you are definitely a trooper, because in Canada, qualifying for the race on Saturday was ridiculously early. Friday was like 7 a.m. But you're up, you're ready, you're ready to go. Qualifying starts at 7. Well, no, Friday qualifying did not start at 7. There was at least all in all about a 20-minute delay just because of the rain that had rolled in that previous morning, and the track was wet. And it was just wet enough where you could run intermediate tires or you could run wet tires, but then it would stop and then the sun would come out and it would dry that track off just a little bit, where like I could maybe get away with slicks if I don't screw anything up. And that's what it was like for the entire qualifying session. Starting off with Q1, it was raining. It was wet. It was not quite miserable unless you were a fan in the camping section, which you don't have any cover whatsoever. You're getting poured on. Track times were definitely slower than what they normally are. There was no big massive crashes. There weren't any crashes at all. There was a couple of, we'll call them, exciting moments for some of the drivers where you could see they were just on the verge of losing control of the car. All in all, minus, if you took the weather out of it, it was a very clean qualifying time. Like I said, the effort was good. Times were lower. No big crashes. But when you add the weather, it was just kind of a delay. It was wet. It was miserable. Not going to lie. Boring to watch. Top five, or bottom five. Alex Albon, Joe Guan Yu, Logan Sargeant in 18th, Danny Ric 19th, Hülkenberg 20th. So a couple of A couple of surprising names. Alex Albon, just the way that he's been driving that Williams, I did expect him to be a little bit higher in the qualifying grid. That being said, it's the Williams is good on a straight track. The longer the straight stretches, the better the car is. The only issue with the car is because it doesn't have as much downforce on it. When it comes to the more technical parts of the corner of the course, it's got 19 corners, 19 turns. That's where the Williams lost the majority of its time for both cars. They hit the gravel a couple times. It wasn't anything super serious, but they lost just enough time where they didn't make it out of Q1. Danny Ric qualified 7th after Q1. It was all good. It was awesome. There was no time left on the clock. It was your last lap. You got it done. Fantastic. And then that little screen, that little white box pops up going, Daniel Ricciardo's time had been deleted due to track limits, which kicks him all the way down to 19th. A heartbreaking finish for Q1 for Danny Ric. But on the bright side, you saw the consistency of him second race in a row. He's jumped in the car. He feels very comfortable. He looks very comfortable driving the AlphaTauri. So minus the track limits, it was all good for him. Q2 pops in. Hasn't rained anymore. Rain has stopped. Now, the amount of tire or the type of tires these cars use, they move a lot of water off the track. And when I say off the track, it's kind of like in the air and it falls in different places. So now what do? Here's your tire management question of the day. Here's where your strategists come into play. Do you stay on the intermediates? Do you stay on the wets? Do you potentially go to slicks? The majority of the drivers pretty much stick with what they were driving with in Q1. It's moving more water. It's fantastic. You can see the track development start to take place. It's drying out. The cars are getting faster. And there's a little bit more grip. And then you get a couple guys that decided near the end of the time, okay, I've got 5 minutes left. The track is dry enough. Let's go on slicks. Esteban Ocon, you're that guy I'm talking about. And you know what you did. You know what you did. You messed up your car. Not really a great look for Alpine, but to your credit, there was no red flag in qualifying. Esteban Ocon's coming around. He's cruising. He's trying to catch that fast lap time. He's trying to get into Q3. Hits the corner. I believe it's corner 11. And he doesn't make the turn. Turns the wheels. It overcorrects. He kind of goes straight. He sideswipes the wall. Takes off the majority of the Rolex logos. Takes a bunch of paint off the car. Wrecks his wing. He's done for the day. Like I said, he was able to get around the track, which was great. Because on a track this size, we're talking 7 kilometers. If anything happens and you're under a time crunch, you are screwed when it comes to your qualifying time. Fastest time, you're talking like minute 48, minute 49. That's the fastest to do 7K. So anything slower than that, you're not making any time. You are, if you have to warm up your tires again due to a yellow flag or a red flag, you're essentially wasting up to 5 minutes to get that lap completed, depending on the speed, depending on what happens. And now you have to cross the finish line again to get that track going, or to get those tires again to get your fastest lap time. So good job on Esteban Ocon to sideswipe the wall, but not put the actual Q2 in jeopardy. Five that were eliminated, going from 11th to 15th, Yuki Tsunoda in 11th, Pierre Gasly in 12th, Kevin Magnussen in 13th, Valtteri Bottas in 14th, and obviously Esteban Ocon in 15th. So these are names that you would kind of expect to be in Q2, if not Q3. The only thing that made this a little more intense than it should have been is, if you didn't see this, Max Verstappen at the end of Q2 was 10th. He was almost kicked out of qualifying in Q2. He got into Q3 by 3/100ths of a second, which is huge in F1 time. But Gasly, Magnussen, and Tsunoda all had opportunities to knock out the two-time defending champion, but they just couldn't do it. The car just didn't have the pace. It didn't have the consistency. Kevin Magnussen had this massive overcorrection, almost put himself into the wall. Same spot that Esteban Ocon did. He had the best chance of knocking out Max Verstappen, but because of that mistake and because of the overcorrection, he was not able to do it. Flip side, the only reason why Max made it into Q3 was because he had a Haas and he had an AlphaTauri and he had an Alfa Romeo behind him. Those are definitely, I mean, he would be, if I was him, I would be thanking my lucky stars. I had those guys behind me and not someone like, you know, Lance Stroll or Fernando Alonso or Checo Perez, because they definitely would have knocked him out at the end of Q2. Q3 comes around. The track now is 80% dry. So now everybody's on slick tires. Everybody's on your regular, you know, mediums, hards, softs. There was a couple of softs. There was absolutely no hard tires on this track. Definitely not the weather for this. And these guys were just absolutely hauling ass. At one point, top three times were between Hamilton, and I know I'm going to add an extra person here. Top three times were in contention for are from Max, Hamilton, Perez, Leclerc, and Piastri. It was fantastic. These guys were all just going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. They were not wasting time with cool down laps. Their cool down laps were surprisingly fast, just again for the size of the track. It was fantastic to watch. It was really, really good. By the time all things were said and done, obviously, you know, you can take a guess. I'll give you three guesses. The first two don't count on who got pole. And he got pole by like 2/100ths of a second. So again, really showing the speed of the Red Bull car, really showing the fact that he showed up to play. He wants to set more records. At this point, he is two wins away from setting another Formula One record. And that would be the driver winning the most consistent races or most races in a row. That one is set by Sebastian Vettel, I believe it is. So Max is chasing another historic record, but he's got to make it through this qualifying session. Tops the charts with qualifying session. No drama at all because the rain has stopped. The track is good. The only issue for Max is he does qualify first, which is fantastic, but he takes a new gearbox. This is his fifth gearbox in the first half of the season, which equals that he gets a five-place penalty. So from here on out, if Max Verstappen replaces his entire gearbox, not just pieces, but he replaces the gearbox, he gets a five-position penalty from here on out for the rest of the year. So he qualifies first. Yay, congratulations. He actually starts sixth for the actual race Sunday morning, which kind of jumbles up the order just a little bit. But you see some very familiar faces back, in my opinion, where you think they should be. They've put in the consistency, they've corrected their ways, and they were rewarded with, you know, the top five finishing. Top 10 for Q3, Charles Leclerc. Yay, he's back. A Ferrari is on pole. Second, Perez. Third, Hamilton. Fourth, Sainz. The Ferraris really came out to play for qualifying. They know this is a very important race. You want to get this momentum before the beginning of the summer break when you got a month off where you're not allowed to do simulator time. You're not allowed to practice. You're not allowed to develop. You're not allowed to touch anything Formula One related for an entire month. It is mandated from the FIA and from Formula One that drivers, CEOs, like all employees of every team, you have to take a month off. Go boating, go skiing, go swimming, go hang out with family. Go to the gym. They don't care what you do as long as it's not racing car related. Oscar Piastri in fifth, Max Verstappen in sixth, Lando Norris in seventh, Russell in eighth, Fernando Alonso in ninth, and rounding out the top 10 is Lance Stroll. I would expect Lance Stroll and Fernando Alonso to be a lot higher than ninth and 10th. They do well in wet weather conditions. They don't do so well in changing wet weather conditions for some reason. This year, they just don't have that dialed in as they knew every other year. But hey, top 10, really good positions. So now if you're keeping track, that's qualifying for the race on Sunday. Saturday morning. Now, this is where you're a trooper. Saturday morning qualifying. If you were like me, you were up at 3. Qualifying was at 4 a.m. Like, oh my God, it was so early. But it did not disappoint. This is my favorite track. Spa is my favorite track for several reasons. One, because the weather always takes its own chunk of the race. It always adds a dynamic, whether it's absolutely pouring rain, whether it is changing conditions, or whether the fact that it gets so windy on some of those corners that you see the car slide sideways on the road, It is definitely one of my favorite. The track speed is amazing. The, in my opinion, you get more overtakes or passing on this track than you do anywhere else in Formula One. And that's why I love it. Sprint, qualifying, Q1. These are shortened sessions. Q1, 12 minutes long. Again, it takes you just under 2 minutes to do a lap. And that's your fast lap. Your exploration lap, depending on the weather, can take up to 3.5 minutes. So you don't really have a whole lot of time to spare. If you get a yellow flag, if you get a red flag, this could absolutely fuck your team's chances on getting into Q1, 2, or 3, or even getting pole position or front row position. It is very important that these drivers pay attention just for the allotted time. And here's a perfect example. Q1, tons of rain. It was raining at the beginning of qualifying one. They did throw in a 10-minute delay for the weather system to pass by, but that's the kind of challenge that these guys had to face. You got 12 minutes. Okay, let's go. Now, because it was raining so hard and the track is so wet, these guys were on full wet tires. They know a little bit about the tires, but they don't know enough to know where they can actually push the edge. At one point, the minimum time to pass the lap was 2 minutes, 5 seconds. And you have 12 minutes. You can get less than 6 laps in at that speed. You really do not have time to absolutely haul. And this caught some teams out just because they're used to being able to, you go in, you do a hot lap, you come back in, your driver dries off, you get your plan ready, you swap out some new tires, and then you go out again. This definitely caught, in my opinion, this caught out Haas, in my opinion, the most. They just, their lap time management was just not on the same par level as everybody else. They both ended up going out in Q1, not for the performance of the car. The car performance was great itself. They just didn't give it enough time for the tires to warm up, for Nico and Kevin to, you know, feel comfortable in the car around this kind of weather. Again, new tires. It's kind of like you're learning to drive all over again to a certain extent. It really caught them out, but no crashes, which was fantastic. The times were a little lower like we had anticipated. And you could see that sense of wanted urgency. You could tell these guys wanted to go faster and faster and faster. Just the cars couldn't necessarily do it because of the weather, because of the tires. Here's your first five that were out in Q1. Yuki Tsunoda in 16th, Valtteri Bottas in 17th, Magnussen in 18th, Zhou Guanyu in 19th, Nico Hülkenberg in 20th. I expected Alfa Romeo to do a lot better than they did. It's not like this weather was a surprise. It's not like they didn't know it was coming. It's not like they didn't know that they needed to practice on the wet tires. And it was just one of those things where, I mean, you're caught out. You're caught out with time. You don't have enough time to prep. You don't have enough time, or you think you have enough time, but you need an extra lap or a half a lap to get those tires activated, to get that grip that you need to move that water essentially off the track to get that grip. And it caught them out. Moving on, Q2, same thing, but now instead of, you've got 10 minutes. You got 10 minute qualifying time, 2 minutes a lap, 10 minutes. Do the math. And now you still have 15 drivers. A little bit of traffic came into play, but not nearly as much as most of us had thought. When you've got this many cars and you've got a lap this long, you want to get your warm-up lap, your reconnaissance laps done, and then you want to slow down just before the start-finish line, especially when time runs out. You want to be that last person to go before time runs out so you can get the fastest lap in, because you're fed so much information all the time, you know where each driver is time-wise, and you want to beat that time. You want to go faster than anybody else. If you're last, this gives you a strategic advantage. But if you don't make it around the track fast enough, you don't get that time. Or in Q2, if somebody hits the wall and you don't have time to get around because yellow flag comes out, you can't go full speed. You can only go like 60% speed on a yellow flag. Safety car comes out, you're knocked down to 40%. So even getting knocked down to 60% of your full speed around Spa will absolutely ruin your day. And from drivers 12th to 15th that were eliminated, This is the first time I've ever seen it. All of those drivers clocked no time. They did not make it to the start-finish line before the clock struck zero to get their fastest laps in. The reason for that is, ladies and gentlemen and Canadian drivers, let's be proud all the way around that Lance Stroll was the meaning of this, and it was for absolutely no reason. It's still raining. The track is still wet. Everyone's trying to think, well, should we go from inters to slick tires? Like, what should we do? Should we go from full wet to slick tires? Lance Stroll took the chance. Okay, give him credit for that. He went from all wet tires to intermediate tires. Okay? He thought it was dry enough. He really did. He's going in, I believe it was turn 11. He's going in too hot. There's 28 seconds left. Tires don't have grip. And he goes into the wall. We're not talking a sideswipe where he kept going like Kevin Magnussen did the day before. He went into the wall. This was a full-on yellow flag type situation. And that ended up with four drivers with absolutely no time. So the bottom are the next five. So we're going 11 through 15. Daniel Ricciardo had time. But he got caught out on his fast lap when this happened, which means that his time didn't count. He had to slow down, which put him back into 11th. Ridiculously unfortunate for him. In my opinion, he was definitely on track to make the top 10. He would have been in Q3, but it's Formula One, baby. This is how this kind of shakes out every once in a while. So Daniel Ricciardo in 11th. Now I'm counting all of these guys as 12th spot because all of these drivers did not get times. Fernando Alonso, Lance Stroll, Logan Sargeant, Alex Albon, all of them with no times because they had to slow down. And when you've got 19 corners, you still have eight more to negotiate and try to get speed back where this crash had happened, or I want to say incident happened. So yeah, all these guys got 12, no track time whatsoever. So what they ended up doing for the beginning of the actual sprint race is they took their warm-up lap times. Whoever was fastest got 12th, so on and so forth, all the way down to 15th. I think it's fair. It's the only track time that they have for these drivers, and it's kind of the only way you can do it. All right, last but not least, Q3. How much time? You got 8 minutes. That's all you got. You got 8 minutes for Q3, but the track has dried out substantially. These guys are now on slick tires. The majority of them are on soft tires, which means you get the most grip. It's easier for this tire to get up to heat for the most grip. Unfortunately, on the flip side, it is also the tire that cools off the fastest just because it loses so much heat. But this definitely did not stop these guys. They were hauling ass, and it was amazing to see. And it was your, I want to call them your usual suspects for the top four positions. Hamilton was in there. Leclerc was in there, Norris was in there, Piastri had his nose in there, all over that. Max and Perez, everybody, there was nobody that was out of contention for the top five. That's how close everybody was. And as it always happens, it came down to the very last lap for the very last sector to see who got pole position. At one point, and we're talking a solid three or four drivers, I believe, it looked like Oscar Piastri was going to be on pole for his very first or his second sprint race of his career. But then the good old Dutch Debbie Downer comes in. Max Verstappen comes in and sneaks it away from him. And you're not going to believe how close this was. Max Verstappen beat Oscar Piastri by 0.001 of a second. 1,000th of a second. 1 millisecond. Was the time difference between the two. I've been trying to think about a distance reference for how long that would take, and I don't have one. I can't come up with one. It's faster than a blink is what I've been able to find. And just think how fast you blink. Like, you can only blink so fast. The fastest you can blink is still not fast enough for the time difference between these two drivers. It was not a fluke. Oscar Piastri, in my opinion, is the real deal, and he's making Max work for it. Now, normally when you see a driver, two drivers being separated by that much time or that little of time, depending on how you want to look at it, it doesn't necessarily speak to the race pace. You're like, oh, he's super close. He just barely made it past him. They're going to be super close in the race. Yeah, except for you're racing Max Verstappen. So Max just beat you by, you know, a millisecond. I have never seen, and I haven't been watching forever, I'm sure this has happened, I've never seen one lap race where both drivers are side by side, and that's what makes a difference when you cross the finish line, is that 0.001 of a second. Congratulations to Piastri for getting second place. It's fantastic. It's amazing. Yeah, we'll see how you're actually going to do when it comes to race time. Predictions, Max is going to win. He's going to pull away with it. But it'll be very interesting to see where Oscar Piastri ends up for the sprint race later on that Saturday. Sprint time. Same day, a couple hours later. 4 hours difference. It's a mandatory time of space between the sprint qualifying and the actual sprint race. 4 hours. It never stopped raining the entire time. So the sprint qualifying was the track, 19 laps, 7 kilometers, 16 laps. Sorry, 19 turns, 16 laps. Okay, that's a good, just because of the distance of the lap, 7 kilometers, you've got 16 laps. Okay, but it never stopped raining. They postponed it a little bit. I think they did a 10-minute delay. And then they decided that, okay, it's safe enough for the drivers to go out. They did clear the track a little bit for water, tried to dry it down. And then the FIA and Formula One decided it's going to be a rolling start, which means when the race starts, it will be behind a safety car, 1 through 20. Okay, there is no passing until the safety car is done. Essentially, what this does is when you add 20 cars plus the safety car and you're driving in a very specific track, these guys are not weaving all over the side of the road trying to get temperature in their tires. Essentially, what they're doing as a collective team is they're clearing the water from the track so you can actually have, you know, somewhere safe to race. And it worked out quite well. 4 laps is what it took with the safety car to get around with these guys. 4 laps, and then they decided, okay, we're going to go. Which now only leaves the shortest sprint race I have ever seen, 11 laps at 7 kilometers distance, and it's literally, it's go time. There is no, I've got a couple laps to make this up. You've got 11 laps, 20 cars. Still, the person in the very back can come all the way up to the front and win the extra points. If you don't remember, there are points associated with the sprint race. Top 8 get points. The first person who wins gets 8 points, then 7, 6, 5, all the way down to the 8th spot who gets 1 point. 1 point can make all the difference. So these guys are still trying like there's absolutely no tomorrow to get in the top 8. We're good. Everyone's safe. We're moving. We're not doing blistering speeds, but it's an actual race. Lap 3 comes along. The first little, oh my God, hiccup that comes along. Fernando Alonso ends up spinning out in turn 11. He hits the gravel, but he does not hit the barrier. He ends up saving it, which is amazing to see just because he is that type of driver. He is able to save the car as much as possible. He is also able to finish the race, which is fantastic. Later on in that race, and we're talking, I think it was lap 6 or 7. Lewis Hamilton is given a 5-second penalty. And everyone's like, for what? People watching are saying, for what? Even me, I'm like, okay, what's the contact for? What's the penalty for? The penalty is for a collision with Checo Perez. Okay. But he didn't drive him to the wall. He didn't hit him off track. There was nothing dangerous about it. What you ended up seeing is that Checo and Hamilton were racing side by side. It was a fantastic exchange back and forth of two very professional drivers. But what had happened was, if you close your eyes and you picture it, Checo's on your left, Hamilton's on your right. Okay, you're doing a turn that's going from left to right. Okay, everyone's in their spot. There's nobody hugging the corners. There's nobody opening up the steering wheel to direct somebody where they don't need to go. But what had happened was, is because Checo is on the higher end of the corner, he's on what's called the apex. When he comes in left to right, he naturally comes down to straighten out on the straight stretch. All cars do this. So when he had come down, Hamilton decided to not budge. Because normally, there's a driver beside you, you move over just a little bit because you don't want to make contact because you never know. You could get a flat tire. You could lose pieces of your car, which sends you into the wall or the gravel. the more you toss over, it doesn't have to be a lot, but the more people toss over and kind of like safety rules, the better the race is. Well, Hamilton didn't really move over at all or enough. And what ended up happening is that the side of Hamilton's car ended up making massive holes in the side of Checo Perez's side pods. He goes and tumbles down 10 spots. He finishes, Checo Perez ends up finishing 15th in the sprint race. Massive damage, not massive damage, but a significant damage to the side of his car. Very, very disappointing day for him. Hamilton goes along to finish the sprint race, but he still gets a 5-second penalty because he was deemed of causing the collision, which is a little unfortunate. It wasn't like it was a malicious move. It was just he didn't toss over enough and kind of like Checo, in my opinion, kind of drove into the side of Hamilton, and Hamilton ended up getting the penalty for it. But at the same time, hey, that's racing. A thing that happened in the sprint race, which was I found very amazing, as well as there was no drama attached to it and everybody did it very, very well, is that lap 5, right after the safety car came in, literally half of the grid, 10 cars came in for brand new tires. So what had happened was there was a change in the weather and they had moved enough water off the track where you didn't need full wets anymore. Okay. The FIA deemed it safe enough where, you know, you don't need full wets. Okay. That's great. The question was before the safety car went in was when was everybody going to change? How many were going to go in for tires? What was this going to look like? What kind of mayhem was this going to cause? Because if it's not a clean pit stop, you can get a 5-second penalty for improper release or a dangerous release, you know, so on and so forth, which is part of, you know, it's part of Formula One. But, and I encourage you to go back and watch the replays. Lap 5, 10 cars go in. It's like an orchestra. Everybody finds their pit lane. Everybody finds their team. They get their tires and everybody's out. It was amazing. Very good timing, very safe release, all this sorts of stuff. It was fantastic. Importantly for the sprint race, Oscar Piastri, who when he started was in second, goes in for new tires. Max does not. Okay, lap 6 comes around, the other 10 go in. So now all of a sudden Oscar Piastri is in before or is in the lead, and now Max has to catch up. It took Max probably 4 laps to catch him. So 6, 7, 8, 9. Yeah, about lap, okay, less than 4. It was, I think it was 2 laps. Lap 8 is by the time he caught Piastri and ended up passing him. Oh, I'm going to say it as easily. He passed him quite easily on a straight stretch. He picked the perfect time. He picked the perfect moment. There was no defending that Oscar could have done to prevent Max from passing him. Too much straight line speed, too much momentum, no DRS either. So when it's really bad weather, there is no drag reduction system for the cars. So Max did it on pure speed, did it on pure intelligence and lessons and maturity. And it was fantastic to watch. I mean, there was nothing, like I said, there was nothing Piastri could do. And again, from then on out, Max just cruised along for the last couple of laps. Not massive differences in between the tire or in between the cars. Everyone was driving at a very mature rate. And it was just great all the way around. Your top 8 for the sprint race itself: Max Verstappen, Oscar Piastri, Pierre Gasly was in 3rd, Carlos Sainz in 4th, Leclerc in 5th, Lando Norris in 6th, Hamilton, even with the 5-second penalty, ended up being 7th, and then George Russell was 8th. So Mercedes again picking up double points. Fantastic to see Pierre Gasly in 3rd for the sprint race. There was a couple years ago, and by a couple I mean I think it was 4, one of Pierre Gasly's dear friends that was in F2 ended up dying in a crash on this course. So it's always great to see him succeed and pay tribute to his lost friend. He always has a custom paint job on his helmet to give thanks and to give honor to his friend. So it's always nice to see him up in the points and to collect as much as he can. And with that, folks, that is your sprint weekend. The last sprint race of the first half of the season completed. I think it's a very successful thing to do. I think they need to add or keep adding sprint races throughout the year. I don't think they need more of them. I think six is perfectly fine. I just think they need to continue on with the sprint format. So let's get into it. Sprint's over. It's Sunday morning now, and this is what we're here for. Let's get into the Spa Belgian Grand Prix. It is race day. It is Sunday morning. It is not exactly a early race. It is a 7 a.m. race. It is amazing. We are talking about round 11. The Spa is the name of the track. It's the Belgian Grand Prix. 44 laps, 19 turns, 7 kilometer distance, track top speed of 350.8 kilometers an hour. Oh my good God, that is literally the second fastest track on the circuit every year. Fastest lap time, 1:46.2. That is all the way back by Valtteri Bottas in 2018. This race is my favorite. This race does not disappoint. And this, again, unfortunately, was a point of a race that just was boring as sin from the top three. I build it up and they knock it down. If you look at this race, like every other race this season, if you look from the top three down, it was in a fantastic race. These guys were back and forth. It was amazing to see. It was fun to watch. And there was a little bit extra drama. Now, when I say the top three, I don't mean right off the bat, because as you remember, Max Verstappen had to start sixth. So he did have some work ahead of him, but I'm getting ahead of myself. Let's start with the race start. It was an amazing start. It was super clean. Turn one was great. There was a little bit of little bumper cars back and forth off the first turn. Nothing super, super dramatic. No cars into the barrier. Nobody spinning out. Stuff that you would call race incidents. Everybody on a really good pace. Both Red Bull cars, both Checo and Max were making up spots. At one point, Checo made up 5 spots during the opening extravaganza along the first turn. And then they just kind of spread themselves out after that, after the first 3 or 4 turns. Just because this race is so long, because the laps are so big. But it makes it very entertaining. It makes it dramatic, but in a slow burn kind of way. It's kind of like watching a really good suspense movie. It just builds up, and then something happens. And when something happens, it is very exciting and well worth the buildup. That is what, in my opinion, Spa brings to the Formula One calendar. Especially when it comes to things like Oscar Piastri. He's going to kill it in this race. He is by far now the most successful rookie of this year. He's making points. He's making, you know, interns. He's growing very maturely when it comes to his racing. So he was expected to do very, very well. It was fantastic. Until lap 2. The buildup was there, and then something happened, whether you liked it or not. A little bit of drama, a little bit of collision between Carlos Sainz and Oscar Piastri. It didn't need to happen, in my opinion. It was kind of one of those chain effects where one car cut the corner that cut off sights that went into Piastri. Piastri was out after lap 2. He was not able to finish due to the damage to his car. Carlos Sainz was able to essentially limp his car along for 17 out of 44 laps. I don't think he needed to go that long. There was no penalties associated with it just because it was deemed a racing incident. It was just one of those cascading racing incidents. But like I said, Carlos Sainz, 17 laps, limped his car along, and then he did not finish as well. I think he, just for the sake of the car, for the sake of the parts, for the cost cap that Ferrari is rumored to be over for the 2022 season, hint, hint, nudge, nudge, he could have saved the car. He could have saved himself a lot of time, because at one point he was, you know, second last just because he just couldn't keep up with anybody. The Haases were passing him. It needed to stop. So he was also the second DNF of the evening. Unfortunately, he was looking really good to be in this race too. He does very well in changing weather conditions. The weather for the race was great as far as Spa goes. I mean, the sun wasn't out. sunshiny 34, 35 degree weather, but it also wasn't absolutely pounding buckets full of rain. They did get rain for about 10 minutes, and that was it. They had a great day, so there was no real excuse to have a slow car. And at this point in the race, I know it's very, very new, but it's really good weather. All thoughts and even the commentators' thoughts and comments went to how long will it be before Max Verstappen gets first? It's not a question of if, it's a question of when. Now, like I said, and what I keep repeating is this track is 7 kilometers per lap. It's a very spread out, or it can be a very spread out race. Some cars can be 5 seconds, 8 seconds, 10 seconds, 15 seconds apart. How long will it take Max to go from sixth to first? We didn't really have to wait that long. It was 17 laps. That was it. Max is a good driver. Now, I also give Red Bull Racing massive credit for the machine they put underneath him. It's an amazing astonishment of engineering. It's great. It's fast. It's very consistent. They worked out the bugs from the 2022 season. It's unstoppable. But when you give Max Verstappen, who's not first, this kind of machine and the determination to go, you still need to be first, he drives with, it's almost, to say the term flawless excellence is a little much, but when you put him on his home, essentially his home circuit, in weather that he excels at, there's not a whole lot you can do about it. He passes where he wants to. And it's not one of those cutoff passes. It's not one of those, oh, he probably should have waited another couple feet. It's flawless. It's smooth. It's intensity. It's driving with massive intent with the skill behind it to back it up. And that's what we saw. It was amazing. That was the exciting part. And then he got first. And then he just, you know, kind of fucked off. He just did his own thing. To put in perspective how fast he was going, he covered 27 laps in 27 laps, he made up 22.4 seconds. Okay. So when he got first, from the time he got first to the time he was finished the race, it was 27 laps. He won by 22.4 seconds. Okay. Now, take into consideration that when he started, he was in sixth place. And at some point in the race, he was about 2.5 seconds behind. So throw that into consideration. He made up 24.9 seconds in 27 laps. It's almost a second a lap that he was faster than everybody else. And just the time differential and just the speed. And it's mind-blowing. And they're not cheating. This is just the perfect alignment of engine production, of thinking outside the box, aerodynamic efficiency. And let me tell you, it's efficient. You look at that car, there's not a wasted inch on that car to make it as fast as it possibly can, to make it as light as it possibly can, to kill as much dead air as they possibly can, to just do everything the best they can be. And this definitely showed that this was the perfect combination of racer and machine. But like I said, from the time he passed and got first, it was 27 laps later he won, and he made up 22.4 seconds. It is just absolutely unheard of. Okay, so spoiler alert, let's move on. Spoiler alert, Max wins. Yay, congratulations. The race pace for everybody else and the drama and the overtakes were absolutely fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. Perfect example, Alex Albon, he's driving a Williams. Still, Williams, you look at them, you scoff a little bit. That thing, straight line speed, would give Red Bull a run for its money. It was amazing. And the way that Alex Albon was driving in the corners where he doesn't have as much downforce, as much speed, or as much grip, it didn't seem to matter. He put everything on rails and he made it the best car on the track outside of the top five. It was fantastic. Now, even though he didn't finish outside, he didn't finish in the top 10, Alex Albon easily for me was the driver of the day. Even when the rain hit again, lap 19, he didn't flinch. He kept the pace. He kept the consistency of the Williams on that car. It was fantastic to see. Outside of the top six, this track, outside of the top six, there was so many overtakes. There was so much passing. That was the entertaining part of the race. This is why I love this track so much. 38 overtakes the entire race. And the majority of that came from position 10 to position 17. These guys were fighting for every single point they could possibly get on this track. That's how close these points are. That's how many teams and drivers will fluctuate when it comes to the standings. And it also shows how hungry these drivers are on a sprint weekend. When they first announced that they were going to have six sprints this year, some people thought the drivers, including some of the drivers, that they weren't going to be as hungry for the win, that they were going to be tired, more fatigued, so on and so forth. But being halfway through the season, and this being the third of six sprint races, these guys are just as hungry from the beginning of the weekend to the end of the weekend, even though they've got so much more responsibility and racing to actually do. Not to be left out of the conversation, even though all the drama that had been going on at the beginning of the week, Alpine, a really strong showing. They ended up getting one of the cars into the top 10. It was nice to see them rally around their drivers and just kind of forget about all the drama off the track and just concentrate on what they had ahead of them. Really consistent drive. Not the fastest cars in the mid-grid, but they were also passing when they needed to. It was very intelligent driving for both Esteban Ocon and Pierre Gasly. And I mean, tip my hats off to them. I'm sure it was very time-consuming and mentally draining to concentrate on the race and just ignore all of the off-track distractions when it came to the firing of the management team. And definitely one team not to be left out of the conversation, Mercedes. Very, very strong showing, both drivers in the top 10. I think the new upgrades have really helped the stabilization of the car. I do think that both drivers really loved how the new car felt and the upgrades, how much they were actually helping the car, not hindering them. It's like they didn't have to learn the car all over again, especially in these kind of situations. Comfortable enough for the fact that on lap 43 of 44, Hamilton comes in for a pit stop, gets brand new tires. Now, normally there is only one reason why you would do this, and this is so you get the fastest lap and you try to take a point away from somebody. Well, as it turns out, Max Verstappen on lap 43 had the fastest lap, therefore he was going to get the extra point. Lewis Hamilton, being the veteran that he is and being as comfortable in his car as he is now with the new upgrades, thought, you know what? Nope, Max, you don't get that extra point. Pits lap 43. Takes the fastest lap on the very last lap of the race. It was one of those, a slight dig at Red Bull and a very big reminder to Max going, hey, there are other veteran drivers out here, so you may win the majority of the things, but you're not winning every single thing every single time. And with that, folks, that is the roundup. That is the breakdown to the last race weekend of the 2023 season, of the first half of the season. That is Spa. That is the Belgium Grand Prix. Let's go through our top 10 winners as well as the drivers and the constructors' standings. Top 10, Max, number one. Checo Perez finished in second. Leclerc in third. Hamilton in fourth. Fernando Alonso, a much more consistent showing, finishes in fifth. Sixth, George Russell, Lando Norris in seventh, Esteban Ocon in eighth, Lance Stroll in ninth, and Yuki Tsunoda 10. Yuki finally broke the curse. He has actually made it into the points. Very consistent drive this year. Very well. He's matured very much from the last season and the season before. But he was also a little cursed when he would get 11th or 12th, just outside of the points. He would drive very consistently, but some drivers would just end up beating him to the punch. Well, not this time. He finally broke the curse. Top 10. You got a point, Yuki. Congratulations. Driver standings. Top 10. Max Verstappen with a commandable lead with 314 points. Checo Perez still in second with 189. Fernando Alonso still holding on the third with 149 points. Lewis Hamilton, though, fourth spot, 148 points. I believe this will change the first race in the second half of the season. With Leclerc's third place victory, or third place today, he jumps to 99 points and leapfrogs Russell. He's up into fifth. George Russell is 99 points in sixth. Carlos Sainz drops 2 points with 92 points. He's now in seventh. Eighth spot goes to Lando Norris with 69 points. Lance Stroll in ninth with 47 points. And with Esteban Ocon's eighth spot today, he leapfrogs into 10th with 35 points. Constructors' Championships, absolutely nothing has changed. No one's gone up, no one's gone down. But Red Bull, 503 points to this time. Mercedes, 247 points. Aston Martin, 196 points. Ferrari in fourth with 191 points. They are definitely going to catch Aston Martin unless something drastic changes at Aston Martin in the second half of the season. McLaren is in fifth with 103 points. Alpine is in sixth with 57 points. Williams and Haas are still tied for seventh and eighth with 11 points. Alfa Romeo is in ninth with 9 points. And now AlphaTauri is still in third, or in 10th, but with 3 points. Congratulations. Thank you, Yuki Tsunoda, for getting more points for that team. And folks, there you have it. That is the breakdown of everything that you need to know about the Belgian Grand Prix for 2023. Again, this was the last race weekend of the first half of the season. The racers take a month off, but that doesn't mean F101 will take 3 weeks off. We're going into what's called silly season, also known as rumor season. So we will be back every week with everything that you need to know in the world of Formula One.